time for the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. This is John Williams. We do this until 1 o'clock, and then from 1 to 2, we tap dance a little more for you, getting ready for Chicago's afternoon news. Right now, though, Elise Glink normally starts us out on Mondays, the owner of Think Link Media and Best Money Moves. She's the host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino, Sunday mornings at 6:30. So I'm looking at some information you shared with producer Pete, Elise. Do I describe it correctly? This is how long you should reasonably be expected to be saving money in order to have a down payment on a house?
I think would change that a little bit. So it's kind of interesting. It's long been known that saving up for the down payment is the hardest thing for first-time buyers to do. And if you look at numbers going back years from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHFA, which regulates the housing industry in this country, what you see is that it can take anywhere from 2 to 10 years to save up enough money for a down payment. And when interest rates go up like they've been going up now, and you've got housing prices that have been rising, it can take even longer. And so out today, just in time for our Monday show, came some information about one way that home buyers might be able to get there faster. And the suggestion is you can downsize your rental by one bedroom. So if you're in a three bedroom, go to a two bedroom, squeeze from a two bedroom to a one bedroom to a studio. And there are certain cities where if you go to save money, you'll be able to do it faster. And Chicago is one of those.
All right. So I go from three to a two or two to a one. Now I've got a little more money in my pocket. Presumably rents aren't cheap in Chicago right now, but I get the point. So then what? What are the numbers then?
Well, when you look at what the starting home price is in Chicago, it's about an average of $201,000, almost $202,000. And so the down payment you would need would be about $21,000. So by saving, shrinking down the living space, and maybe even moving to a less expensive neighborhood if you can, you could save about $9,000 a year. That's the price differential just by squeezing in. And so after about 2.25 years, you'd be able to afford to buy a house. Now, I will say that there are loans that you can get for less than 10% down. So we can talk about that separately. But this study that came out really looked at what cities you could get the biggest price differential by squeezing into slightly smaller space.
This is something David Hochberg and I have talked about, sometimes loudly. What's your thought about the amount of money somebody should bring to close? What percent?
That's interesting. I think that, you know, bringing the amount to closing is the lawyer that you're working with is going to tell you exactly how much you need. And then the big mistake that a lot of buyers make is like, oh, I only need $3,000 or $5,000 or whatever. I'm just going to bring a personal check. Personal checks taken.
And I am talking about the percent. Like, once upon a time, I think a lot of us thought, well, minimum 10 and maybe 20% if you're, you know, if you want to avoid
down
PMI, sure. And I said to close, but I'm thinking more about the down payment. You know, because if you're financing a lot of the house, you don't have much equity. That's how you get upside down. If you lose your job, if you lose some money, it can be very difficult to stay in those homes. Anyway, that's what I was thinking, Elise.
Oh, right. I understand. So typically, we always recommend that you put down 20%, and then you're going to need a little extra cash to have just to make sure that they call it, you know, to put it aside so the lender knows you can pay the bills for a few months. But, you know, 20% is really hard for a lot of people when housing prices are jumping up. I mean, the idea of saving $40,000
on
that starter home price, right? That's a lot. And so 10% down payment loans with private mortgage insurance have become popular. You can actually do even better with an FHA loan and do it for as little as 3% down. Or if you're a teacher, a firefighter, a police officer, there's a couple of other people that fall, different kinds of job categories that fall into this, but HUD homes, which are FHA foreclosures, and there are some out there, HUD homes have special programs for teachers, firefighters, police officers that could allow you to put down as little as $100 and get a house. So lots of different ways to get there.
It's 12:16. That's Elise Glink. We'll come back with Elise here in just a second and talk more about the top 10 complaint categories. I'll give you a clue. Number two, speaking of landlords and tenants, number two is landlords and tenants. But there's a category in which we buy goods or services that the complaints are even greater than that relationship. What am I talking about? Elise Glink from Think Gleek Media, the co-host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino. At Sunday mornings at 6:30, joining us to talk a little bit about, I wanted to get to the consumer complaints, but what else is on your financial radar today?
Oh, goodness. Well, we're looking still at things that are coming out in terms of earnings. Those are sort of interesting, a little mixed, a little tough right now for technology stocks. But we're also seeing that consumers are concerned about buying and selling. Fannie Mae's latest survey, the Home Purchase Sentiment Index, decreased another 2 points. It's the lowest level since 2011, and it is well below the all-time high that was in 2019. People are pretty pessimistic right now, John.
Pessimistic about what?
Buying a house, selling a house. It's pretty worrisome. I know interest rates have been bouncing around a bit right now. They're somewhere between 4.5% and 5.5%. Sometimes they're going up and down 0.5% in a day, which just reflects the bond market and how nervous everybody is there. We're also seeing the percent of consumers thinking it's a good time to sell begin to ticking down. That's going down. It used to be 76% in May. Last month, it was 67%. And we're also seeing more houses on the market. So people want to sell their homes, and yet not as many buyers are out there. So we're starting to see the number of the housing inventory tick up.
I saw the headline over the weekend. Some sellers worried they missed the wave. If you did, it doesn't make you a fool. It means maybe as much as you wanted to sell, you didn't have a place to move to. Or, you know, there's a lot of reasons that people stay in their house.
Yeah, I think this is a pause. I would look at this as a pause. There were some new numbers out from consumer sentiment regarding where inflation is going to be. So there's this thinking with economists, John, that if you think inflation is going to be 10%, you can get yourself there. Like, we collectively as consumers, what we expect to have happen in the economy actually could happen because everybody expects it to. And there's a whole bunch of research around that that's pretty interesting and complicated. But the idea that we're also thinking that now is a bad time to buy, interest rates are up, prices are up, but interest rates are going to come back down again. If inflation is going to come down, interest rates are going to come down because we'll be in a recession, the Fed will have to lower them. So think it's better if you missed this round with buying or selling, just wait, because I think in another year or so, this roller coaster is coming back around.
To your point about the economy, I do think there is, and I'm not blaming the media on this necessarily, but there is a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that if we talk enough about how bad the economy will be bad, or the recession will happen, or interest rates will stay high. I mean, I don't want to say we're complicit in this, but it's our spending habits, it's our saving, it's our economy that is driving these numbers and this attitude. And other guests on this show have said that the spin has been very dark.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what's the chicken and what's the egg, actually, right? So, for example, you know, I'm sitting here telling you that people are worried about the economy and they're not really buying and they don't, you know, think they missed it. But that doesn't mean, I'm not suggesting that that's about to happen. I'm saying as a reporter that has happened, right? We're in the business of talking about things that have already happened. But I think that there's people who didn't know that it already happened think that we're forecasting the future. And so you get into this chicken and egg thing with the media that can be very damaging.
Well, and I have the luxury of being a cheerleader, not a reporter, too. I mean, I want to maybe put a positive spin on things, and that may not be the reporting. That may be my sort of pushing, which is a different responsibility than maybe you have. The nation's top 10 consumer complaints. this almost looks to me like the areas in which people have complaints, the businesses or categories.
Yeah, the Consumer Federation of America publishes the nation's top 10 consumer complaint categories every single year. And most of them are pretty much the same, but they are the listing of the actual complaints fall into these categories that were made in 2021. And so for the sixth year in a row, the number one consumer complaint involves the deceptive conduct in the sale of new and used cars, along with complaints about auto repair shops. So this is a category, auto sales and repairs, that people have a lot of problems with. And what's interesting is that in terms of auto sales, you know, 2021, the heart of the pandemic, if you still look on auto shop, auto floors, right, for, you know, car sales, there's still very few cars mm-hmm. to be sold. And there were last year as well. And yet people were complaining about it. So that was number one. Then we had landlord tenants, a lot of complaints there, particularly because I think of the pandemic. People didn't want to move. They were forced to move. Then they didn't want to pay their bills. Then they did pay their bills, or they couldn't pay. You know, there's just a lot going on there. And of course, we're seeing an increased number of home repairs. And so, of course, that came in at number three, home improvement repairs and contractors.
Yeah, yeah. How many of us have had the guy not finish the job after you've paid the bill?
Or come late or whatever.
Right. And the list goes on. We'll talk more about that maybe later this week or later today. But for now, that'll do. Elise Glink, the owner of ThinkLink Media and Best Money Moves, and with Tom Fortino, Sunday mornings at 6:30. Thanks, Elise.
Thanks, John.
You knew that this was going to be the summer people finally started traveling and flying again, and you also heard that this was going to be the summer that maybe the airlines would not be able to handle it. So lo and behold, here we were, another weekend with hundreds of flights delayed or canceled, and I don't know that there's a lot of relief in sight. Writing about this is Hannah Towey, who is the business news reporter with Insider.com. Hannah, were you surprised that we had another rough weekend at the airports?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. And no, I wasn't surprised. I mean, it's really just been a perfect storm this summer of a variety of issues facing the industry, and it's not going to end anytime soon, unfortunately.
And what are the issues? What's going on out there?
I mean, the simplest way to look at it is that there's an imbalance of workers and this demand for travel that's been building up throughout the pandemic and is now exploding as restrictions are loosened. So, I mean, it's not just airlines. It's also government agencies, third-party providers, airports, and there's labor shortages. All of these moving pieces that sort of have to align perfectly in order for your flight to run smoothly. But there are lots of other issues going on behind the scenes that are not helping.
What are those? What are you talking about there?
I mean, one example that an Air Canada employee told me that I think is pretty representative is there's a massive security clearance backlog at the Toronto airport. So even though the airline has hired all of these new workers, they're not cleared to work at the airport for another month or two. There's just little things like that is out of the airline's control that are colliding right now.
I wonder, too, is this true? The airline sort of created this monster in that in 2020, in 2021, they offered sufficiently generous packages to pilots. They got them off the payroll. Now people are flying again, and they don't have the pilots to fly the planes. That's part of the problem, isn't it?
Totally, yeah. It all started there, and not just pilots, flight attendants, ramp agents, and they let go of tens of thousands of workers and sort of expected that once they needed them, they'd be able to bring them all back. And obviously, these people had to, you know, pay rent, feed their families. So a lot of airline workers left and found other jobs and switched industries entirely. And, you know, some of them found that these new jobs had higher pay, less stress, more consistent hours, so they don't want to go back. So now the industry is stuck trying to recruit and train all these new hires. And as I said, that takes a lot of time and clearance and, you know, certifications. So
you spent some time writing about how impactful this is on a personal level for people. And you even wrote about or wondered if the airlines sufficiently appreciate how angry this is making people, how traumatic this has been for some people who had to get somewhere for a thing and they couldn't or didn't.
Yeah, I mean, what makes this summer particularly unfortunate is that there's been all these important life moments people have been unable to do throughout the pandemic, whether it's weddings or birthday parties or mother-daughter trips. And so people have really, really high expectations for returning to their quote-unquote normal, but the industry isn't anywhere near normal right now. And as an airline, it can be easy to just see the numbers and, you know, cancellation after cancellation, you start to forget how important each individual trip is. But, you know, it's not just for leisure. There's some really important events people are trying to get to that I've been hearing. And it is heartbreaking for that to be dehumanized on a level.
And if your vacation is what you are planning on, maybe that's not a wedding, maybe that's not a job interview, but by golly, you waited all year, you saved your money, and so that's an important life event. And when I know people that have missed cruises because they couldn't get to the port of call in time, or were late for weddings because they sat at the airport half a day. I wonder if the airlines appreciate how pissed off people are, or for that matter, will there be repercussions down the road? I don't know that we have many options, but I think people are kind of angry.
Yeah, people are definitely angry, and the airline workers on the ground I've talked to are angry too. I mean, they are in this industry to make sure people have an enjoyable trip and are passionate about that. So, you know, flight attendants, customer service workers, they don't like dealing with all these issues either. And they're angry at management for what they believe is an underappreciation of their work, too.
Well, it does make you wonder if somebody didn't make a mistake last year or the year before. I mean, how could they not have foreseen that they're going to need these employees back or get more people in the pipeline? What is being said about that?
Retrospect is 2020, and I think there's definitely some things that could have been prevented. But they're just playing catch up right now, and you know, some CEOs aren't predicting that their staffing levels won't return to normal until next summer. And I don't know if we have answers at this very moment.
Yeah, is this related to COVID anymore? I mean, that's what started it all. Are they still saying it has something to do with COVID right now?
Definitely the staffing levels for sure. And I think as passengers, you know, we view COVID as the virus itself and the sickness and the infection levels, but COVID really changed the industry somewhat permanently. And these are repercussions from the pandemic, and they can't be separated. They're totally interlocked and related. I think a lot of the time, if your flight is delayed, you'll get, you know, crew restraints or pilot restraints, weather, but you can't always be totally sure what the real reason is.
Yeah, I think a lot of us think that. It's 12:44. You can read more at businessinsider.com. Hannah, thanks for your time today. We appreciate your reporting.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new report says Chicago area foundations increased their grant making by 52% in 2021. Cranes reports the top 25 organizations on its list of Chicago's largest foundations paid $2.78 billion in grants last year. The foundations made grants to a variety of beneficiaries addressing wealth inequality, housing, food, and access to basic resources in vulnerable communities. The Chicago Community Trust led the way, paying nearly $1.5 billion in grants, a 137.5% increase over the previous year. The newest spot to eat at Chicago's Navy Pier is Reunion. It's at the west entrance and replaces Bubba Gump Shrimp, which closed in 2020 after 24 years at Navy Pier. Crane says Reunion had been scheduled to open in 2020, but was delayed because of the pandemic and other related issues. The restaurant features comfort and southern food, including fried chicken. Reunion is headed by celebrity chef Art Smith. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
I've got some Tom Skilling coming your way, but first, we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. When Wendy Snyder brought up the topic of corn sweat last week and the contribution of Midwest cornfields to humidity and our sweat, I gave our buddy Tom Skilling a call.
Hey, Steve.
Tom, I got a text from a longtime farmer after that corn sweat discussion last week that corn sweat is real.
Yeah.
She said, just go stand in a cornfield on a hot summer day.
You feel it. It's really amazing.
But to be fair, we're not blaming the good men and women who raise corn for our perspiration problems.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, it's not just corn. They're all the crops. Any vegetation transpires moisture. So this is in no way critical of our farmers or anything else. Our farmers feed the world. They do an amazing job. But any plant transpires moisture to the air as it's pulling in carbon dioxide as part of its life process. It releases, as part of that process, water vapor, and it amounts to quite a bit.
And there are other contributors to our often oppressive mugginess, like soil and lakes and rivers. And the big one is the Gulf of Mexico, isn't it, Tom?
Oh, yeah. 70% of the rain and snow that we get in Chicago, as well as the humidity of the air, comes out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Still, we are not dismissing corn and other crops as contributors to not only our sweat, but also some of our bad weather.
You know, one of my colleagues did an analysis of that record-setting flood in the summer of 76. It was the year after all the heat wave deaths. That was the 17-inch rain, the all-time record for the state of Illinois. And they concluded, Steve, as I recall, that 75% of the moisture that was involved in that horrific cloudburst was the product of transpired moisture from crops. So, you know, it's a big issue around here, no question.
He's a legend, Chicago's very own Tom Skilling. From the farm to your belly, today is National Frozen Custard Day. It's also, if you've got some to get rid of, it's National Zucchini Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Senior tax analyst Andrea Rayla joins us now on WGN with Rayla and Associates. I want to talk a little bit about property taxes and property tax relief. Andrea, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, I'm glad to be able to come on.
We have not a lot of time, but let's first just talk about what you all do. I mean, for seniors or anybody, if I think my property tax is too high, I might hire you to try and get it lowered?
Absolutely, yes. We evaluate your chances of trying to negotiate with the government an adjusted tax bill. But a lot of folks are not familiar with the fact that we have at least 7 different types of exemptions that can be applied. And, of course, we guide those that are eligible to these exemptions. And one that is very, very important is the senior freeze, but there's also a new law that affects something called the senior deferral program.
Let's
and
talk
it's
just,
good news.
Yeah, let's talk briefly about that. That there's an income cap on that, right, of $65,000?
That's right, $65,000. Now, this deferral, this is when there's around 26,000 seniors who fit the bill and have deferred their taxes under this deferral program, and at the time they were having to pay $50,000 or less, an income of $50,000 or less, but it's gone up to $65,000, and so has how much you can defer paying your property taxes. After you sell your home, you'll have to pay the county back the taxes that they covered for you. But the deferral program was not utilized well because they wanted to charge 6% interest rate to defer, whether it would be $5,000, and right now it's $7,500.
Yeah, right. Well, shoot, with mortgages less than that, I guess that sounded high, but that's been lowered to 3%, right?
It's been lowered to 3%, but if you think about it, John, you know, 14 years have gone by in the Great Recession in 2008. The mortgage interest rates were at 5%, and on through those 14 years, it was 3% and 2% and so forth, and yet that deferral program stuck with that 6% excessively high interest rate. So we're seeing good policy right now. The best thing for seniors, if they want to be able to defer $7,500 of their property tax bill, they should apply for the 2020 deferral program, and the application is due March 2023. Unfortunately, you still have to pay 6% for just that 1 year, but it adjusts permanently to 3% for the rest of the law.
Got it. And Andrea, is the idea that when you sell the house, you'll take the equity out to cover the taxes? Is that it?
Yes, that's exactly right. It's a good program, but not many people wanted to work with it because of that high rate that should have come down many years ago. And there was legislation advocating it to be dropped down to 3% or 2%, and it never got passed, John.
What good is a program that is, you know, by definition, not that attractive? Give me one other program that maybe we should know about, Andrea.
There's the program called the Senior Freeze, and with that, you have to be one person in the household, has to be 65. Their joint income, though, has to be $65,000 or less. But it's interesting to note that, I mean, the impact that our inflation, which is now at 9%, has on seniors with fixed incomes. You know, they own a home, and yet their maintenance, their gas, and everything else, like all of us, has gone up. But the senior freeze is capped at $65,000. But Social Security benefits are tied to inflation. So you're going to get increased Social Security benefits that could knock you out of not getting the senior citizen freeze because it would exceed that $65,000. So our elected officials need to start thinking about possibly capping the senior freeze income to, let's say, inflation, or as one senior was arguing, at least tie it to 90% or 75% of the Social Security benefits increase.
And those benefits are included in your income, right? Those count towards the cap.
Right.
Just one last thing then. Talk to me about property taxes in Chicago and in Illinois. Are they going up? What's the status of that?
Yes, unfortunately, we have a new program where the mayor and the alderman approved indexing our property taxes to the increases to the national CPI, the Consumer Price Index. With that, because it's gone up so high, although they do cap it at 5%, Chicago tax increases are going to quadruple in 2022. The Tribune says it up to $22 million. And then in 2023, it could be as high as $85 million. So we're feeling the effects of the highest inflation rates in 40 years. Mm. And to even come up with such a policy that indexes your property taxes to inflation rates is really double counting, John, because inflation rates already impact our home's value.
Yeah.
Through demand, right?
Sure. It does seem like a double dip, or at least the wrong thing to tie the increase to. It just makes it that much worse. Andrea Rayla is a senior tax analyst, Rayla and Associates. You can get help by clicking on railapc.com, railapc.com. I'm out of time today, Andrea.
Taxes2high.com as well. Thank you, John, so much for having me on. I think these are really critical issues.
Taxes2high.com. Boy, there's a good URL. It's 1257 on WGN.
Money saved through energy efficiency can directly benefit a business's bottom line. That's why businesses throughout Northern Illinois are partnering with the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program to find up to 35% in energy savings, resulting in lower energy costs for their facilities. Because at ComEd, we're powering your business's future. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. ComEd, powering lives. Savings figure is hypothetical only. Actual savings will vary based on the measures implemented and on customers' usage and rate.
Earn now, spend later during Blaine's Farm and Fleet's Rewards Members Dollar Days. Now through August 14th, Rewards members earn $10 in Blaine's Bucks for every $100 spent in store. Redeemable just like cash August 18th through the 28th. Start earning today on Cooper Tires, all on sale. Plus, get up to $100 in rebates on select Coopers when you buy a matching set of four. Rewards members get an extra $50 instant savings. So start earning Blaine's Bucks now on Cooper Tires to spend just like cash August 18th through the 28th.
It's a Townstone Financial Mortgage Monday. You won't need to call timeout after using Townstone for your home purchase, refinance, or reverse mortgage. Guaranteed great rates and low closing costs. Townstone.com.
Just Googling websites that are available. excuse me. Are you planning that summer road trip that we've been featuring? Many wonderful destinations here. Every Thursday, we talk about great places to go in the Midwest. But before you head out, I want to make sure that your car is ready to go. Oil changes, make sure the tires are rotated and checked if you're going to put some miles on there. And the place to take it is to the factory-trained service professionals at Jerry Haggerty Chevrolet. Lo and behold, we were just talking about consumer complaints with Elise Glinken. The number one category is automotive. I think there's plenty of people out there that might get your car ready to go, but they aren't the factory-trained service professionals.